assumptions just don't serve us well, Jeremy. And so if we can just take the time to create clear agreements, understandings, whatever it is, so that we're all clear about what we're doing and how we're doing it, we got a much better chance of succeeding.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
So I've worked in corporate headquarters, I've worked in satellite offices, I've worked from home, and becoming a productive teammate to all of your colleagues has been a challenge to so many of us, especially over the last year. That's why I knew I had to speak to Kevin Eikenberry and Wayne Termill. They're the co-founders of the Remote Leadership Institute, and in their new book, The Long Distance Teammate, they offer readers at all levels of an organization advice for moving from team members to teammates. What I like about this book is that it's prescriptive and actionable and allows individual worker bees to take ownership of their own engagement to their work and relieve the stress and frustration that can come from remote working arrangements. As most of us have figured out, there can be quite a few. Kevin, Wayne, welcome to Future Proof.
Hey, we're glad to be here.
We are indeed.
So I want to ask you guys, who are you guys? What do you do on a day-to-day basis in your own words? How do you define it?
Wow, we're getting deep in a hurry. My name is Wayne Termill. I live in Las Vegas. I have been in the training and development space for 25 years. The last 15, though, I have been really focused on remote work, virtual communication, that kind of thing. And about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, Kevin and I joined forces to create the Remote Leadership Institute, and here we are.
The old commercial was, I liked it so much I bought the company. That's what I did with Wayne. Hi, I'm Kevin Eikenberry, and I'm Wayne's co-author. I own a company called the Kevin Eikenberry Group, and have done so for 27 plus years. We're in the business of helping leaders and organizations and teams be more effective in the world today. That means being able to do that remotely. And so, as Wayne said, for about the last 6 years or so, we've been doing that, collaborating in terms of the Remote Leadership Institute. And this is our second book in this area, one for leaders and now one for teammates.
Okay, so let me play devil's advocate for a second, right? Why is remote work an important topic for the average corporate worker to pay attention to? You know, especially if, let's say, the pandemic has an expected end date, according to many experts. Why is this something that is going to matter more in the future than it does now?
Because the genie is out of the bottle, right? So first of all, remote work was gaining steam and it was a trend before. But now, whether leaders like it or not, team members have figured out that while there are challenges, and I know you're going to ask us about some of those, Jeremy, that the reality is they've figured out that it can be done. And so the average corporate worker probably wants to be able to do it at least some of the time. And so that's why they should care about it, because many organizations will be forced to move that direction, even if they don't want to, because the talent pool will say you must.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true that the trend was there. I mean, already, and this is true even of people who are being surveyed in the middle of a pandemic, the ability to be more flexible with remote work, maybe not work full time, is the number one requested perk. I mean, obviously people want more money, but in terms of perks, this is number one, and it's not even close. The ability to have more control, the ability to work from anywhere. And then the other thing that's happened is that senior leadership has figured out that this is actually a pretty good thing. A lot of senior leaders have been surprised by how work can still get done, and that's changing their view of what's going to happen down the road.
So in the future, I know you both write that engagement will be up to individual employees rather than solely, you know, to their managers. Can you go into that a little bit?
Oh, it's not that it will be, it's that it always has been. You know, ultimately, whether you engage or not has always come from within. The company can make it easy to engage or easy to disengage, right? But it doesn't matter how many pizza parties they throw and how much there's, you know, cake in the break room and all of those good things. If you don't engage with that, if you don't see the self-interest in that, they can try as hard as they want, but that's not going to make you engage. Engagement is, yeah, it's entirely self-driven. You either engage or you don't.
Yeah, so leaders, organizations, and people like Wayne and I suppose, authors, consultants, etc., have done a big disservice to employees, because we've said, hey, leaders, there's something you can do to make them engaged. It's just wrong. Wayne said it's entirely self-interest. At the end of the day, it's a choice. We make a choice to be engaged. We make a choice to care. We make a choice to provide discretionary effort. We make a choice to see ourselves as a part of something bigger than our work. And so while certainly as leaders, there's plenty we can do to create an environment to make that choice easier, it's not about cake and ping pong tables, video games, and massages. It's about people making choices to care about their work and be engaged in it. And so I hope the future has more of that than the past.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Of course, there's all these other factors, such as the fact that, you know, in a lot of cases, when you're away from everybody else, you know, you might be drained more than you've ever been before. Let's say if you're all of a sudden new to working remotely, and the engagement is almost that much harder when you're that drained, right? So I'm wondering, how can remote workers best recharge, if that's at all possible?
Well, it's possible. We recharge by doing what is important to us, right? And as human beings, we get energy. 75% of people are somewhere on the extrovert scale. They get energy by interacting with other people. If you don't interact with other people, the energy flows out of you and you're not getting anything back. So that's, you know, a really simple example. When you're stuck inside your own head all day, right? Drawing on your own resources and not getting inspiration and bouncing ideas off other people and doing that, it can be draining. And so there's this notion that it's easier to be at home than it is at the office. And it just isn't necessarily true.
The other thing I would add to that, Wayne, would be that routines and habits play a huge part in how our energy moves and is managed. And, you know, when we have something that's a routine, we don't have to think about it. It just happens, right? We had routines when we went to the office. Start of the day routines that we did. Then we went to the office and then we shifted. Right now, people are so, it's so hard for them to keep separate work and home. That creates a problem. And by not having routines that help us to separate those things, it makes it harder for us. It is an energy drainer because everything, when there's not a routine in place, it all has to happen consciously. So it takes more conscious energy and effort to do it. So if we can create routines to help us make those shifts and manage our energy, then we got a better chance of success.
The other thing, and this is an unintended consequence, but it was kind of inevitable, is that because we've never worked from home before, or at least haven't in hundreds of years, we don't know how to turn it on and off. So one of the unintended consequences is we're literally working more. We're working more hours. We don't take breaks. We don't have that, you know, half hour of car time singing to yourself on your way to the office that can help pump you up, right?
Speak for yourself, Wayne.
We're literally drained because we start expending energy when we roll out of bed and it goes until we collapse in a fetal position at the end of the day.
You know, I was going to say what's really interesting to me in some ways about that is I found that there are a lot of people who I know who previously they had a commute. Now they don't have a commute. And because of that, they have a little bit more time to work. So because of that, it's naturally, or I don't know if it's natural or not, but their focus level has gone down because they're like, I've got more time to get my work done. So as a result, they might, you know, dilly-dally here and there. As more people are working from the home in the future, and this becomes more of a new normal, how can people better focus now that this is entirely, you know, their responsibility and nobody's really designing their workplace for them? If they, you know, a lot of these people previously, they went into the office, and in some ways, focus was not done for them, but the office environment was designed to help them in some ways.
There was structure.
Well, and it was a location that was built and designed for working as opposed to a structure that was designed and built for living. And so that is part of the problem. One of the questions, one of what we call our four productivity pivot questions is the focus question. Where is my focus now? And regardless of where we work, if we will ask ourselves that question and then listen to and act on our answer, we've got a chance to be more effective, Jeremy. So I think that one of the ways people can focus better is to be clearer about what is most important, but then just ask themselves, what am I focusing on now, right? Because you made a really excellent point. People are still getting their work done. It doesn't mean they're more productive. It means they're spending more time to get there, right? And so productivity, we believe, has a numerator and a denominator. And it's work per hour. It's not just, well, I was busy, right? And so if you're saying, well, I'm busy, ask yourself that focus question. What am I focused on now? Is it the right thing or not? Busy is a four-letter word for a reason, Jeremy.
And you said something else too, which was just kind of stated, well, you know, we're in control of our time. Are we? I think that is a fair question. There is a real responsibility for the organization, the team leader, whatever, to work with the employee so that everybody understands and creates some guardrails around time. You know, a lot of managers are perfectly happy to have people answering email at 6 a.m. and at 11 at night, but is that sustainable? Is that what you want your team doing? Is that how you want your people working together? So yeah, ultimately, you know, we choose to engage or not. We choose to do this stuff. But there is some enlightened self-interest on the part of the manager and the organization to help create structure that we may not create on our own.
It's interesting. It's like one of those structural things that I guess technically still exists is for employees to get feedback in a, you know, somewhat structured manner. You know, and I'm thinking in terms of, you know, reviews every quarter or every year. Those things, those structures still exist. But even that, you know, little bits and pieces of feedback that you would get on a regular basis, I feel like that might be missing to some extent if we start to abandon the office in droves. And is it harder for remote employees to get that kind of feedback? And if so, how do they, you know, take the onus on themselves in order to get that?
Well, it's a great question. And the reality is that most employees don't get enough feedback anyway. And there's really nothing that's keeping us from doing it when we go remote, Jeremy. But the reality is that you're right. We don't have the incidental. We don't have the accidental. We don't have the serendipitous conversation where it may happen. And as leaders, we don't always have as much direct information in which to give some of that. So my advice, or our advice to employees and team members, teammates, is to ask for it. Now, obviously, the higher the trust level in the organization, the easier all of that will go. We talk about that a lot in the book. But I think the big key is if you're not getting what you need in terms of feedback or pretty much any other area, then you need to be willing to ask for it. Say, so, hey, Wayne, I'd really like to know how I'm doing. Give me some feedback on what you're seeing. And doing that, whether that's Wayne as my boss or whether that's Wayne as my peer, is the best place to start. Being open and willing to ask.
I think actually, managers are at least aware that there's the possibility of not giving enough feedback. And so, you know, the good ones are mindful of that. I think where there's really a shortage of feedback, and this is what separates being a team member from a true teammate, is the peer-to-peer feedback. The willingness to ask if everything's okay, the willingness to say, hey, is that what you really meant? You know, those conversations don't happen the way they did when everybody was sitting together in the cube farm. And so it's really easy for each individual to kind of go into their little silo and not do the kind of collaboration and the kind of team feedback that creates really great outcomes.
So I know that you talk a little bit about how remote workers can bridge the gap between expectations and reality, which I found particularly interesting. Can you talk about that a little?
Kevin is pointing at me like I have something that he wants me to say. And to tell you the truth, I'm not entirely sure where he's going with that. So I'm just going to lob the grenade back in his lap and then I'll pick up the crumbs.
Okay. Well, so I think that We make all sorts of assumptions about other people and what reality is, right? And so we have limited data and we look at that and then we make assumptions about what that person's doing, what they're doing, why they're doing it and all that stuff. And if it's not quite what we were hoping for, then oftentimes we move to this thought of negative intent, right? Like they're trying to do this, that, or the next thing, or they're self-absorbed or whatever. I think the big key is, in our book, The Long Distance Leader, I said one of the most important things leaders must do in a remote world is to set clearer expectations. And in this book, we talk a lot about getting clearer expectations with everybody else. Because in the absence of the information, we start to make negative assumptions. Assumptions just don't serve us well, Jeremy. And so if we can just take the time to create clear expectations, and that word may seem strong, so use the word agreements, understandings, whatever it is, so that we're all clear about what we're doing and how we're doing it, we got a much better chance of succeeding.
I think part of it is that we make assumptions every day that people understand, they know how this is done, right? This is how the team works. This is how you use Microsoft Teams. This is how you record this particular information. And when we're all in the office together, you know, you can give somebody a raised eyebrow, like, what are you doing? Or you can see that somebody is doing something that doesn't match your expectation and quickly adjust, right? You can fix it, you can adjust to it. But when we work remotely, if we aren't explicit about this is how the team should work together, these are the tools that we're going to use, the team processes, it's really easy for people to do their own thing, find workarounds, do what's easy for them. Some of us, he says guiltily, will find ways to short circuit reports that we should be doing because it's not our favorite thing to do and nobody's called us on it, but then we're not doing what the rest of the team needs. So when we're talking about expectations, it's really important that they be explicit and not just manager to employee, but as a team and across so that everybody knows what's expected of everybody else. If you're going to be a real team and not just a bunch of people answering to the same manager.
Yeah, that's one thing that I find particularly interesting because, of course, in pandemic times, it's one thing if people had relationships already from the office and then they all went remote. I think it's a very different thing if you start to get onboarded and you've never met people. There are all these things that you might have learned, through osmosis in a traditional office environment that when you never had the moment to even temporarily work with those people in person before, you know, being cast to the four winds, then you're missing a lot of those things. And I think that there's aspects of working relationships. I'm wondering what are some of the hurdles that long distance working relationships that you're going to have in those types of relationships that you wouldn't have when you have that water cooler type of conversation. You know, so are there any particular hurdles that, you know, those perennial long distance workers are going to have to master that everybody else doesn't necessarily have to?
You know, one of the things that we uncovered as we're doing research for the book is the number one word that showed up more than any other in the conversations we had with people was proactivity. And a lot of times we think of proactivity as if something needs to be done, you do it without being asked. And if you see something, say something. And that's all true. But where proactivity was absolutely necessary was in communication and building relationships. Where I haven't talked to Andrea for a while, I'm just going to reach out and see how she's doing, see if I can help, see what's going on. I have a question. I don't really want to bother anybody, so I'm just going to keep it to myself and not ask it, rather than doing what we would do in the office, which is, hey, can you help me out here? So that being proactive in terms of reaching out, in terms of intentionally building relationships. One of the things that Kevin does here that is, I think, the most powerful thing we do when we onboard somebody is every member of the team has to schedule, the new person has to reach out and schedule a half hour webcam conversation with every other member of the team, whether they're going to work with that person on a regular basis or not.
And the expectation of that call is not to talk about work. Maybe you need an hour because maybe we need to talk about how we're going to work, about specific work stuff, or I need to understand what your job is, Jeremy, or whatever. But this is a call that's explicitly about starting to form and build the relationships. And I'll give you another example from my work as the leader of the team that could certainly apply for us as individuals, team members, teammates as well. And that is, I have what I call the rule of four. My goal is that every day I talk to at least, that I really talk to four members of my team, of our team, that I have a real, I have an interaction with at least four every day. And if I don't make that, then I don't feel like I've succeeded today. Now, and I don't always make it. Now, of course, I have to make sure that it, you know, it isn't the same four and all of those things. It goes back to Wayne's point, but it's about being proactive. It's about being intentional. And it's about taking responsibility to build those relationships. If we're truly teammates and not just people working from home, individually, right? If we're truly teammates, we have to recognize that part of our job is building those relationships. Without the relationships, we're not really able to do our job.
And we need to take into account the long-term implications of doing or not doing that. Give you, for instance, I'm working on a project and I need something from somebody in finance. And so I send the snarky email, hey, you said you'd send that, where is it? And I can get the information from that person, but I might be eroding long-term my relationship with that person. Or I might not reach out to that person until I need something. And now it's a very transactional thing. There's no relationship. Why would they want to do me a favor or move me to the front of the line or do whatever if I'm just a name on an email?
Well, that's what's interesting to me. If I'm thinking kind of like a parallel of if I was working in an office, I can kind of intentionally bump into somebody to just see how they're doing or to catch up on basketball or whatever. If it's remote full time, then I've got to Slack that person and it becomes an intentional exercise. And that's good and bad. You know, I guess it can be good in that you're getting the credit for reaching out and checking up on somebody and so on. But it's also a little bit like it, I don't want to say forced, but it feels to some people who've been used to working in an office environment a little bit different to take that overt action, I'm guessing, right?
Well, when we work face to face, we get bombarded with visual cues, right? Somebody's coming down the hallway and you're like, oh, holy cow, I haven't seen that person in a while. Or it twigs, oh yeah, I've got to get that person that piece of information. And so all this stuff happens. You said something really interesting, which is you don't get the accidental things. You can if you watch for them, right? Like in the Slack conversation, I haven't heard from Angie in forever and suddenly Angie shows up in the list. Right. And she has a comment. Do I take the time to, hi, Angie, or hey, Angie, that's a really good point, right? Which I can do in that conversation. And it's not quite like I've had no clues, but I now suddenly need to think about Angie. She's there. She's in the workflow. She's there. I just need to take that next small step.
Here's an important thing to remember that we now have a smaller sample size of communication and interaction with everybody else, which means that every individual communication takes on greater weight, right? So even though Wayne's not seen Angie five times like he might have in the office, when he interacts with her there and says something, that matters. And if he doesn't, the sample size stays even smaller. And so now everyone matters more. We need to be more aware of how we show up, but just showing up is part of the battle.
And that balance is really important. You know, something that I've been telling people a lot lately is we need to remember it takes 8 to 10 positive Yelp reviews to overcome one bad one in terms of measurement. Well, it's the same thing with our daily interaction. If the only time we interact with somebody is when there's a compelling reason to do it, and that reason is likely negative to some degree because there's a problem or a question, if we're not creating a bank account of interactions, mostly positive, every time something bad happens, it takes on much greater significance than it would normally. And that creates that negative intention mindset.
I want to ask you guys one last thing in closing, which is as more work moves remote, I have to think that there's certain types of people who are going to excel and, you know, this will be an advantage for some and maybe a disadvantage for others. What types of people will be more likely to thrive than before? And likewise, what types of individuals might actually be less likely to succeed in a remote environment if they don't, you know, work on some particular skills in that area?
I think it's a fair question. And yet, I think it's a slightly misguided question. Here's why I mean that. Because at the end of the day, I think what's required is that we have the right mindsets, right? Rather than it's going to be harder for extroverts and introverts or anything like that. It's much more about having the mindset that says, hey, I'm still a part of this team. I have teammates and I'm not just trying to work in an insular way. And that I realize I have to take care of myself, whether that's getting more interaction or whatever that is. Those that will thrive are those that have a mindset that says, I am an important part of this team. I will be proactive to help that team and to get what I need. I will work to build the relationships with the rest of the team and with my leader or boss. And I think that is much more than, you know, whether we want to think Myers-Briggs or DISC or anything like that in terms of this type of person or that type of person. Like, your question's a great question. I just think we've got to think about it in terms of the biggest key is the people that choose to look at their work in more productive ways have a much better chance of success.
I think to Kevin's point, the people, introverts, extroverts, whatever, the people who own their work and have that mindset of I am responsible, not only for getting the work done right now, but for the work of the team and for my long-term development and success, the people who own that are the ones who are going to be successful because they'll adjust where they need, they'll make a point of getting what they need, and they'll be mindful about how they act, not just kind of stumble through each day.
The subtitle of the book is Stay Engaged and Connected While Working Anywhere. And the folks that are going to be successful are the ones that make the choices to do those things.
I was going to say my subtitle is Stumble Through Each Day. So I like Dwayne's comment over there. But gentlemen, I think that it's an easier read than people might even think it would be. And I think it's incredibly important in this day and age. So I hope a lot of people pick it up. And thanks so much for making the time.
Our absolute pleasure, man.
Thanks again to Kevin and Wayne for making the time. I mean every word that I said. I think that this is something that more and more people, even if you don't work remotely yet, there's a good chance that you will over the course of your career. So be sure to check it out. If you'd like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and Lee Cortuccio, and assistant producers Aaron Cohn and Michelle Portnoy. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.